This is Audible.
Podium Publishing presents Well Fed, Mountain Man, Book 4. Written by Keith C. Blackmore. Read by R.C. Bray. Chapter 1. Gus. At the sound of his name, he turned all the way around, ass tight on his chair, baseball bat across his knees, and leather jacket zipped up, despite the moist heat of an Indian summer sun. The black motorcycle helmet he wore, a gift from Adam, once comfortably warm on his head only 2 days before, felt like a very personal pressure cooker. "Talbert," Gus said quietly, digging at his balls. Talbert's face screwed up at the display. "Yeah, that's right," Gus rumbled through his lowered visor as he stood. "I'm scratching my balls, Talbert. My goddamn balls. What do you think about that, huh? Man's got a right to scratch him when he feels like it, right? They itch, I scratch. That's how it works. Fucking lost track of how often I scratched them today. Got something to say about that?" The two men squared off against each other on the lookout mound. The raised pile of dirt gave a decent view of the harvested cornfields, wheat fields, and fruit orchards surrounding the farm, right up to the distant tree lines, where the autumn leaves blazed on the ground like papery ash.
"Whatever," Talbert muttered. "Listen, want to talk to you about something. Figured I'd come on out, give you a break here."
He smiled thinly and gestured toward the empty fields.
"You busy?"
"Yeah, I'm busy. I'm scratching my nuts."
"Lay off your boys for a fucking minute, then. Give them a rest, why don't you?"
Sighing, Gus did just that. "There you go. All done. What do you want, Talbert? And talk fast before I dig in again. Something about you makes them itch something fierce." As survivors went, Craig Talbert wasn't the most likable one in the group, which was Gus's way of saying the man was a fucking knob. An axe wound to the genitals had more appeal. Plenty of affable folks lived on the farm, but Talbert was the kind to whisper a joke behind your back not more than 10 feet away, and then crank up the enamel flare in a sickly smile of brotherly love if you turned around, only to roll his eyes the very second you turned your back again. Physically, the man had lost a lot of weight, as they all had. His raspy voice got on Gus's nerves, as if he used to smoke 4 packs a day, and that dapper eyebrow of a mustache was something else. The lip it was attached to just didn't seem to match it, a dainty whisker that Talbert had a habit of slicking with a wet finger or thumb, trying to coax it to greater thickness. In addition, the man always had a perfect part in his thick black hair, a combed-to-the-side eraser line that stitched his scalp and made Gus think of white centipedes for some reason, the long-ass carnivorous kind that entomologists handled with tongs. Too bad a person couldn't pick whom they shared the apocalypse with.
"Been out and about, you know," Talbert said with forced nonchalance. "Checking out parts of the valley, seeing the sights, seeing what's what."
"Adam know you've been doing that?"
"Course he does. Even gave me the thumbs up. I wouldn't do anything without flying it past him."
Gus doubted that, suspecting Talbert and his slicker-than-slug-slime smile could easily ooze on over to the bad side, the nasty side, where impulse gripped the reins of reality in hard fists and cracked them often, usually in the worst possible way. If Adam and company hadn't found him first and brought him to the farm, well, Gus had a pretty good idea which direction old Tal might have swung. A patch of tall standing grass fluttered near the edge of a field, like a trout breaching the evening mirror of a lake, immediately drawing Gus's eye and dividing his attention. "Yeah, right," he muttered.
"Hey," Talbert barked, offended. "I'm fucking... What do you think I am, a fucking scavenger or something?"
Gus leveled a "you really want an answer to that" look.
"What's that for? Hey, bro, I got your back. I got your back. You got mine, right? Right?"
As Sonny Jesus was his witness, Gus hated questions like that, especially from people he considered dicks. Decided silence was the best defense.
"Right?" Talbert persisted, The break in the grass weaved and bobbed like the world's crankiest etch-a-sketch. Talbert followed the tilt of Gus's helmet and asked a less challenging question.
Got something here, Gus? I can go out there and stomp on it for you.
I wouldn't let you scratch my balls.
Hey, fuck you!
Talbert snarled right in his face, confrontational and bellowing breath bad enough that it somehow got past the visor.
I'm getting pretty fucking tired of you, bro. Pretty fucking annoyed. If you got something to say, you just say it. Get that shit off your chest. Hey, never fucking mind what's over there.
Talbert nailed two hard fingers into Gus's shoulder, forcing him to lock eyes with the dapper douchebag. You know what I do out here, right? Gus asked. Talbert got right up in Gus's business then.
Getting the impression you don't like me, dude.
Gus flipped up his visor, revealing angry pink scars on a brow shiny with sweat. Now where'd you get that idea? Couldn't have been from that big goddamn box of nothing I gave you on your birthday. Certainly couldn't be from our daily exchange of pleasantries on the farm here. Or does fuck off have a different meaning in your tribe of buddies? Hm? 'Cause if it does, why not... Oh, I don't know, tell me, so there's no side-assed miscommunication next time. How about it, shit-flicker? Talbert's face set with anger, his black eyes darting up, down, and to the sides in their sockets as he examined Gus's hairless face. Gus had scorched pretty much all the hair follicles around his brow, cheeks, and parts of his chin a year and 7 or 8 long months before, when he'd unsuccessfully tried to kill himself. His once mighty beard grew only in patchy clumps. For a split second, Gus thought Talbert was going to take a swing at him. But then, without warning, the guy backed away and smiled, as quick and easy as that. Gus marveled in disbelief at the man, wondering if he thought a change of tact might diffuse the tension.
Okay, bro,
not your fucking bro.
Dude,
call me dude one more time. And I'm gonna kick my cowboy boot up your ass.
Gus!
Talbert suddenly laughed, smiling as though they were old buddies, which was freaky raised to infinity.
Hey, look, I just came out here to talk, okay? Not fight. Jesus, man.
Then more talk and less pissing off. Talbert took another step back, hands holding his hips.
Okay, okay. Found a house farther on down the valley. Just before you get to Digby. Almost missed it, really. It was off the map and hiding behind a thicket of trees. Sort of like this place, except, well, with a longer road that goes past some apple orchards. Big fucking house. A goddamn mansion, to tell the truth. Anita Littles from down around there. I talked to her last night. Says that it was owned by a guy named Mortimer, who was the owner of some website for hooking up lonely Christian singles. Sold it for a fortune and became a recluse. Me and my crew are going to head on down there and check it out. Figured you'd want to be in on it.
A puzzled Gus shook his head. Why the hell you want to go there? Talbert's face darkened.
I just said to check it out.
You mean loot the place?
Yeah, okay. Fuck it, loot the place. You want in or not?
I don't understand why you're heading all the way to Digby to loot some mansion. Waste of gas to go down there.
Not much left in the towns. Not after you took a match to Annapolis.
Gus sighed, loathing the memories of the drunken fire crusade he had carried out upon the city. Not because of what he did, but because of what he put down. Or hoped he put down. We got everything we need right here, where it's relatively safe, Gus said. No need to go to Digby.
Look, Talbert pointed a finger at the far-off trees. Me and Sheldon, Mike and Benny are heading down there today. Leaving within the hour. Get there early afternoon, check it out, camp overnight if we find anything, and come back in the morning. You in or not?
A dark shape oozed from the edge of the cornfield, filling the bordering ditch like an enormous worm. Gus felt his stomach clench, not from fear, but just from annoyance. The thing barely moved there, seemingly mystified with the puzzle of the trench. One arm reached up as if it were doing a painful backstroke before dropping out of sight. Gus took a better grip on his bat. Talbert looked in the direction of the ditch. A smile slashed across his face upon spotting the gimp.
"Crawler at 2 o'clock," he said.
Crawler. Nearly 4 years after the zombie apocalypse and the resurrected horrors that hungered for living flesh, an end was in sight. The deadheads passed through 3 stages of unlife in the new world, going from freshly deceased runner to the gimp that staggered about on decomposing feet and limbs to finally the crawler, a zombie whose unending shuffling had sanded down the soles of whatever they wore right to the blue-gray flesh of their feet. It didn't end there as they kept on walking, grating away each layer of flesh, rubbing themselves out right down to the bone and leaving a trail of shredded skin and muscle tissue, until balance failed and gravity sucked the creature down to the earth. Then they pulled themselves along with a wormy locomotion, wearing away their undersides, eroding the chest, belly, arms, and legs, right up until nothing remained of its ruined musculature, and the gimp stopped in its own streak of fleshy rags and streamers. These days, the world beyond the farm didn't interest Gus, who had no desire to return to the scorched husk of Annapolis or any of the smaller towns. But he'd heard stories of how Talbert and his boys ventured forth on scouting or supply missions. He heard about what they saw, how bleached and bloated corpses covered streets, sidewalks, parking lots, and front lawns, unmoving until they detected the living, whereupon they writhed in place like sun-baked snakes nailed to the ground, ripping themselves apart at times, starving for a bite of whatever was handy. Talbert had spoken, boasted really, about how he danced upon whole skulls, breaking them underneath boot heels. As much as Gus hated the animated dead, however much the sight of them sickened him, there was also an underlying guitar string twang of pity. They'd been people once, probably had families, and no one deserved the morbid ending of a gimp when assholes like Talbert came along. Talbert delighted in killing the undead, had fun doing it. Though Gus couldn't express his exact feelings on the matter, he knew it was morally wrong and psychologically fucked up, which brought him full circle back to his suspicions about Talbert in the first place. If the man got off on killing the dead, could he do the same to the living? What stopped him? Very little, Gus concluded. He scanned the fields, already harvested for the oncoming winter, their bounty being prepared and stored away by the other members of the community. Their tiny colony lived off the land like in the old days, in the breadbasket of the Annapolis Valley, subsisting upon grown vegetables, fruits, and berries. Toss in some farm animals that had survived the apocalypse, a little wild game hunting, and you had the solution to the problem Gus had faced when he lived on the mountain. Just how does one survive in a world without supermarkets and processed food, especially when it all expires? You go back to the very basics. Seeing nothing else amiss along the farm's borders, Gus ignored Talbert and marched along the road to the outlying ditch. Talbert followed on his tail, yakking, but Gus wasn't listening. He only had eyes for that rotten shell of a once person, seeing how the depth of the ditch buckled the dead thing's spine backward in a yoga stretch. One arm flapped weakly, festooned with rancid holes that might have been bites. The putrefying gray-black head rocked against the ditch's side, disturbing the dirt. The gimp's mouth opened, displaying wormy gums worn down to the bone. Gus cringed. The toothless ones bothered him the most. They reminded him of feeble grandparents wanting a kiss. Gus was thankful the crawler wore clothing. Ragged jeans with frayed threads, a filthy film of a t-shirt chewed through by kilometers of abrasion. The skin of its chest had shredded down to a gray ribcage. Knees missed their protective caps and lay open to crusty black joints and stretched sinews. A slug of a tongue stirred inside its mouth.
"What are you waiting for, man?" Talbert said from behind him. "Pop that thing!"
Gus sighed.
Christ, Talbert blurted in exasperation.
He stepped around Gus and put his boot through the nose of the trapped gimp, crushing the egg-thin nasal bone. Talbert hooked the skull with his toes, attempting to turn the thing over in the ditch, tearing the head from the shoulders in a fragrant spatter of clumpy ink.
Shit,
he swore before withdrawing his boot and stomping, squishing the head in a burst of bone and brain matter.
That's how you do it, Talbert declared, freeing his boot from the mess. The fuck got into you, Gussie? Your tampon in too tight or something? Maybe you should stay back here and guard the farm.
They faced off, and after several long seconds, Gus broke the stare and sheathed his bat in the leather scabbard draped across his back. Yet another gift from Adam. Once that was done, he produced a pair of gardening gloves and pulled them on. Talbert threw up one hand.
Well, I'm wasting daylight here. I thought you'd be badass for a trip off the farm. Better than this, anyway, but you ain't. You keep the peace here, and I'll bring you back a teddy bear, okay?
With that, Talbert turned and walked away, kicking up gravel as he went. Gus focused on the dead thing cluttering his ditch. One gimp at a time was more his speed these days, keeping the folks on the farm secure. Going the length of the valley to rummage for expired medicine or whatever didn't interest him, nor did meeting more survivors and puzzling over their true intentions. His lot in life now was keeping the fields clear, protecting the farm, and disposing of the dead. Little else interested him. Taking a breath, he grasped the deadhead's arm and grimaced as he pulled the body out of the ditch. A hip bone caught on the edge. Gus tugged, and the torso came free in a dry popping of flesh and bones while the lower part sagged back, leaving him looking dismayed.
You piece of shit.
A hole had been dug nearby for such a catch, and Gus dragged the upper half of the corpse toward the open grave, intending to bury it before lunch. Talbert walked over to three men waiting near a burgundy minivan. He shook his head to give them advance notice.
No?
A surprised Sheldon Smith asked, his sandy blonde hair pulled back in a surfer's beach braid at the nape of his skull. He was the tallest of the four, broad in the shoulders and wearing a set of John Lennon wire-frame glasses.
No. Talbert flapped a hand. His balls are milk, dude. If he still has balls, that is. Mount up. We're out of here. If traffic's not too heavy, we should be there just over an hour.
He watched the three men climb aboard the van, all eager to break into a mansion and take a look around. Following Sheldon, Matt Machete Miller had his namesake strapped to one hip in a leather sheath. Talbert had once witnessed Miller decapitate a pair of zombies with one swing of that wicked blade, something that shocked the shit out of him. Benny Shaw had a hammer hanging off a stripped-down carpenter's tool belt. He wielded that flathead with a speed and power that made Talbert wonder if the man was bionic. All of them were in their physical prime, much younger than the 44, 45 years Gus was hauling.
Gus.
Luring that scorched prick wasn't the easiest thing to do, even for a snake charmer like Talbert, and that failure burned in his craw. Truthfully, exploring and looting was a young man's game. Talbert wanted Gus along only so he could kill the bastard. Until the arrival of the old man, he'd been gleefully enjoying the fall of civilization purely for the sheer freedom it allowed. A guy could do whatever the hell he wanted in the new world, go anywhere he wanted, with nary a law official around to stop him. Houses, banks, stores, and army bases, all the forbidden places were wide open for business. Talbert's group had already explored the battle-wrecked airbase in Greenwood, having a blast with playing at the controls of the remaining military aircraft, but ultimately disappointed in failing to locate any additional stores of munitions for automatic weapons. The magazines they'd pulled off dead soldiers or found on base had been depleted long before, when the zombies had been more active in their wandering. Recently, any zombie fighting needing to be done was resolved hand-to-hand, unless a house yielded a box or two of regular shotgun shells. Maggie and Adam made most of the decisions on the farm. Maggie had been designated as the de facto leader since she was a doctor back in the day, possessing invaluable skills that secured her position in the little community. Adam actually owned the property, and Talbert wondered if the old codger wasn't sticking it to Maggie in the wee after hours. He'd been living at the farm for almost 2.5 years, and he still didn't know. Not that he cared. Talbert preferred the younger stuff. But, unfortunately, the apocalypse hadn't produced too many young, nubile, ready-to-fuck model types aching to latch on to strong alpha males like himself. The movies screwed up that part. A handful of birds who'd managed to make it to the farm were either married or well past their prime. The distinct lack of fuckable TNA on the farm pissed Talbert off, made him and his boys edgy, restless, made them think the farm needed new leadership. When Adam first hauled Gus's torched ass out of his car way back when, Talbert didn't think anything of it. Adam had even identified Gus as the same guy who'd once fired upon him while he was in town. Maggie got to work and brought the nearly dead man back to health. By that time, people were in more than just a little awe of the burned survivor. Gus possessed a celebrity's aura, which befuddled the hell out of Talbert. When discussing matters important to the farm, all 23 of them would gather in the living room of the main house to listen to proposals, and almost always, folks waited until Gus mulled an idea over and offered his opinion. It amazed Talbert how they blindly looked to Gus for guidance for no reason whatsoever, something that Talbert failed to do the entire time he lived on the farm. All Gus did was show up, and the toothless cock-smoker became an instant celebrity. Only thing the balding prick didn't have was an entourage. That kind of confidence, that kind of weight, irritated Talbert. If Maggie and Adam came to a violent end, the little colony would gravitate to Gus in an instant. Gus had to be removed. The discovered mansion had been an opportunity to rid themselves of the man in a very convenient manner.
There were zombies. Gus was overwhelmed. We got away.
End of story and perhaps a week of long faces. Except old Gussie didn't want to go on safari. That pissed Talbert off. Leave it to that marinated ass-sore to shit the bed. Talbert had to think of another way to kill the man. Perhaps more extreme methods had to be considered. Cracking a few living skulls didn't bother Talbert. In retrospect, the last couple of years seemed to be preparing him for that very eventuality. Gus had to be made gone, had to be rotor-rooted, jettisoned.
Another day, Talbert fumed.
After they checked out the mansion. His little gang waiting aboard the van, Talbert made a quick inspection. Body armor stripped from the dead soldiers at CFB Greenwood filled the rear compartment, as did a small collection of bats and knives. Tools of the trade. Talbert took one last look at the main farmhouse, smelling freshly baked bread on the air. Saw the faces of the kids, Becky and Chad, peeking out from an upstairs window. Talbert forced a smile and waved, but the children ducked out of sight.
Goddamn little noisemakers.
He shrugged and turned his attention to the nearby barn. The building had been converted into a small but roomy barracks, redolent of dried hay. Simple shelter if one wasn't picky. Perched on a hill and surrounded by apple groves and perhaps more, the mansion appeared to be a leap into luxury. Talbert had a very good feeling about the place, the potential of the property. He yanked open the passenger door of the van and slapped the side.
All right, let's go. Things don't get done on their own.
They drove past Gus, shoveling dirt onto an unseen deadhead. He had his visor up and stopped in mid-toss as the van rolled by. Smiling, Talbert gave him the finger. Chapter 2. With the legs of his wooden chair planted firmly into the lookout mound's dirt, Gus leaned back. Visor up, he eyed the outer limits of the farm while taking deep, contemplative breaths. The temperatures felt more seasonal. To the northeast, however, a nearly black bank of clouds spilled toward the valley, closing on the sun. Near the barn, a few people chopped and stacked wood. The background noise of falling axes and low conversation put Gus at ease. He leaned back a little farther, two wooden legs off the ground, and planted the head of his bat into the dirt. The fields lay empty, but he remained vigilant. The morning before, the zombie, the same piece of trash Talbert had stomped on 2 days previous, had a visitor, one that both disturbed Gus and lifted his hopes. A rat. A dead rat with its dusty snout half buried in the recent Gimp's grave. The little rodent wasn't only dead, it was reanimated, but barely moving. Gus had nudged the thing with his boot, hard enough to flip the sun-toasted horror over onto its back. That had been an eyeful. The rat's underbelly had worn away to nothing, a dried-up shell of madness. It had reminded Gus of a narrow strip of grimy scalp, complete with legs worn down to nubs of bone that twitched. The eyes, resembling tiny raisins, had shriveled up deep inside its skull. He'd nudged the rat a second time, and the snout opened weakly, ready for action.
Little fuck.
Gus had squashed its skull under his boot heel, disliking the eggshell crunch. Burying the abomination had taken only a few minutes, but the memory and significance remained with him. The zombies were wearing themselves out, their biological bilge finally decomposing to a point at which they almost ceased to be a threat. The same appeared true for the rats. Since their bodies were built low to the ground, the erosion would be much faster than in the regular deadheads. According to Maggie and Adam, the infected rats never reached the farm, perhaps because they'd never had a putrid trail of breadcrumbs to follow, as had the swarm that assaulted Gus's mountain hideaway. In any case, time allied with the living. Soon, very soon, it appeared as if the undead would become immobile. If so, Gus doubted the undead could stand another summer sun. One more hot season would be enough to melt them into foul stains. And the world could come out of hiding. There was just one problem.
Gus!
A rush of deja vu overcame him. He lowered his chair, turned, and saw Adam approaching, recognizing his short-cropped silver hair, the bulbous nose from a decade of heavy drinking, and the faded gray eyes of a person who'd seen things he'd spend the rest of his days trying to forget. The older man was a little slimmer around the waist, but still retained plenty of spring in his coils.
"How you doing out here?"
he asked in his Hants County drawl, stopping beside the chair and studying the lay of the land.
"Feel a distinct chill in the air today. Enough to send my boys to high ground."
"If they get too high, you'll have to get Maggie to take a look at them."
"Ah," Adam said dismissively. "She's seen them enough, I think. Still, better to have your boys cupped than not at all. Shit. See any more of them rats out here?"
Adam and Maggie had been the only people he'd shared his discovery with. Gus realized his social skills were still a little wonky from the 2 years of being isolated on the mountain. Some days, he felt more forthcoming with the others, especially the kids, but some days he kept to the mound and just watched.
"Nah."
Adam squinted at the sun and made note of the clouds. One of the youngsters called out, little Becky Norris, and Adam waved in her direction.
"Chad chasing her again?" Gus asked.
"Yep.
Nice to see."
"It is. It really is, but who knows? Shit, right now, I figure those two are pretty much the only children left in the valley. Hard to imagine."
"Yep.
Unless we find more children out there. Hopefully with their parents alive."
Gus agreed. It was a shitty time to be orphaned.
"They like you, though."
A smile accompanied Adam's words.
"Yeah.
Gus liked them, too. Besides Adam and Maggie, they were the only ones on the farm whom he didn't mind visiting the mound.
Like they adopted you or something."
"Kinda busy here, Adam."
"Shit, yeah, I see that."
Gus didn't know whether he was being genuine or cleverly disguising a sarcastic dig.
"Anyway, gotta talk to you about something."
Gus sighed, having a fair idea of what something was.
Talbert and the boys haven't come back yet, the older man stated. Knew this place smelled better. Quieter, too.
Adam rubbed at his head and scuffed his shoe into the dirt.
Yeah, well, I suppose I knew you'd feel that way. Regardless, they went down to Digby and haven't come back. Been a couple of nights now. Maggie's worried. Frankly, I'm worried.
Don't know why you're worried about Talbert.
I know you don't care for the guy, but he's part of this community. Sheldon, Mike, and Benny are part of this community, and it's four of them. There's only 23 of us here, Gus. 23. I'm sure there are others out there somewhere, but until we make contact, we're it. And missing four from that number hurts, even if they are assholes.
They're assholes, all right.
But they're our assholes.
One's enough for me. It does what I tell it.
Wait till you hit 50.
Why 50?
I forget I said that. But think about this. Although we screw up our noses at them, assholes are essential to the body. Important to the whole.
Gus exhaled in sad disbelief.
Assholes are what? Jesus Christ, I can't believe we're having this conversation.
Hey, remember that time when I was driving around Annapolis one afternoon and had this guy shoot the hell out of my ride?
Gus slumped.
That's low, man, he said, the guilt heavy in his chest.
I mean low.
Still got that car, too.
Gus, lips as tight as piano wire, remembered that day all too clearly.
Loved that car, Adam went on, purposely ignoring his companion's discomfort. You know I made out with my wife in that thing? More memories in that back seat than I can remember. Still runs, too, even though it took enough lead to make the body look like a salt shaker. A shitload of duct tape holds it together now. Plastic instead of a windshield. Damn thing flutters when...
All right, Gus erupted. All right, I got it. Stop rubbing it in. I'm sorry, okay? I'm sorry. You want me to get you a new car?
Nah. Only bringing that up to illustrate my point on assholes. See, I thought you were an asshole, right? One puckered-up, burnt-out, brown-eyed asshole. But I went back, and when I found you in the middle of the road, ripped up like you'd been sucked up by a snowblower and shot screaming into a wood chipper, well, shit shoot or not, I couldn't leave you there. You understand what I'm saying?
Gus did, but shied away from admitting it.
I gave you a second chance, man. Shit, I had to. You were a person, lying face down in the middle of dead territory. A piece of work who'd broken both arms and pissed and shit himself, no less.
Please tell me you kept that part to yourself.
Which part?
Gus twirled a finger.
The parts about the shitting and the pissing.
Oh, hell. What do you think I am? Sure, I kept quiet about that. Sure enough. Even an asshole has some measure of dignity. No need to bring shit like that up. No, sir.
Thanks.
Can't say the same for Maggie, though.
Gus lowered his head into a hand.
Well, she did do the majority of the repairs on you, Adam carried on. Including the cleanup, and I know she talks to Thelma. Oh, what can you do? She's the doc around here. Got us by the chicken necks and giblets. Anyway, point is, I thought you were an asshole, but you really weren't. Not at all. Now look at you. You're the sheriff around here. Wouldn't have happened if I didn't take the chance. You see what I'm saying? Talbert? Sure, the man's a dick. Can't say I haven't had my times with him, 'cause I have. He's another gut-clenched, rug-burned asshole, but there's another side to him, too. He and the others go out there and bring back things we need here. See? They risk their lives to improve ours. What does that tell you? You've seen him go out there. He's not all bad. You just haven't... well, discovered the good side yet.
Yeah, Gus breathed out, unconvinced but understanding the reasoning.
Anyway, Maggie and I figured that it might be an idea for you to go look for him.
That widened Gus's eyes harder than a finger probing for his prostate.
You're fucking kidding me.
But Adam wasn't. Gus saw it on the old guy's face.
I can't go out there. Who'll protect the farm? We've done okay when you weren't here, and the zombies haven't been around like before. Like you said, they're thinning out. Might be one day we can go back to the way things were, minus the creature comforts. We'll do shifts like before. Gus barely heard the details. Adam's request flickered across his mind like a short-circuiting neon sign. Go out there and look for Talbert? Look for a guy he secretly hoped became a deadhead just so he could cave in his skull? Jesus H. Christ. Anything else I could do? Gus pleaded, very much willing to bargain. Nope, Adam chuckled, thinking he was joking. Just do that. Anita knows how you can get there. She'll give you directions. Maybe she should go. Another giggle. You're on fire today, ain't you? That would be a sight to see, Anita cruising on down the highway, on the prowl. At 68, Anita Little was the oldest in the group.
Adam?
A little voice squeaked, and both men turned to see Becky and Chad standing just a few steps away. Both were 7 years old, their cheeks wind-kissed and ruddy from running about. Chad's blonde hair was buzzed short, while Becky's hung down to her waist in a straight cascade of brown. Four brown eyes the size of eggs peeped at Gus, melting any angst.
Could you, fix our swing? Becky asked in a raspy squeak.
What's happened to your swing, honey? The older man asked.
Well, it happened like this. I was swinging just fine, but when Chad took his turn, he stood up on the seat, and the rope busted on one side, so, now we have no seat for our bums.
That true, Chad? Chad's head hung between his shoulders, caught in embarrassment and probably unaccustomed to standing still. The kid had a wild streak in him, plus an everlasting tank of energy.
Yes, sir,
the boy muttered, twisting his upper body left and right as if he'd been hooked through the shoulders and couldn't quite wiggle off.
But it wasn't my fault.
No? How's that?
The swing was, old, see?
Becky had taken on a flat expression of disagreement, but to her credit, she let the boy talk.
It would have broke anyway, so it's best it happened this way before someone got hurt.
That's true, Becky? Adam judiciously asked.
It is, but, it's not? If he wasn't, hopping on it?
At that point, she took a deep, clarifying breath and focused on a spot past them all, which prompted Gus also to check just to make sure nothing was amiss.
If he wasn't hopping on it, we could still be swinging, but he did, so we aren't. You were hopping on it too, Chad accused.
Becky rolled her eyes. I'll fix it, Adam declared. Won't take long. You guys got anything else to do?
No,
they both chimed, which suggested that might need checking on as well. All right. You guys better be telling the truth, Adam said. Say see you to your Uncle Gus. Gus didn't really like that. He wasn't their uncle. A friend, yes, but not an uncle.
Gus, are you mad?
Becky asked, charming him. Nah, I'm not mad. Old Gus just has a lot on his mind, Adam added with a wink. He might be taking a trip. Fucking guy. Gus flashed a glare. Hold my ass. And he never got a hug today either, so go on and give him a hug. That'll make him feel better. They don't... He got out just before Becky ran up and threw her arms around his chest and squeezed for all she was worth. The embrace left Gus breathless, the shock as clear and crystallizing as plunging into tropical waters, except it was the cuddle of a little girl. Her hair smelled of unspoiled beaches, her clothes of hand-washed detergent. Gus's frown dissolved under those little arms. A smile surfaced, and he hugged her back, held it for a few seconds, and released. All his fight was sucked out of him. Then Chad roped him around the neck.
You're choking me,
Gus half-croaked, half-chuckled. The youngster was strong for his age. Chad eased off, but Gus's arm engulfed the boy and hugged him for a three count before letting go.
See you, Gus,
Chad waved as he departed after Adam and Becky.
See you, Gus,
Becky beamed and pulled a few strands of hair out of her eyes. Gus waved back, feeling a pang of sorrow watching them go. Adam glanced over his shoulder, his smile victorious. Clearly, that had been an orchestrated and outright weaselly move. They disappeared around a corner of the main house, and Gus's thoughts darkened. Fucking Talbert. The next morning, he packed a few supplies into the back of a beige SUV and left as the sun began to brighten a clear night sky. He didn't say goodbye to anyone, not even the children, who slept in warm beds, dreaming good dreams, while November chilled the world beyond their shared room.
Chapter 3. The sun glared down on the 101, a highway war-painted with skid marks, freckled with craters, and splitting at the seams from hard-punching winters. Gus drove with the SUV's sun visor down. His aluminum bat rested in the foot space of the passenger seat, rattling at times, its handle leaning toward him, ready to be grabbed if needed. Autumn trees crowded the highway's shoulders, streaking past in a blur of fire. On road trips such as these, Gus missed the smell of burning leaves. That took him back to his painting days and a dislike of clearing gutters. Cars, trucks, and long-haul trailers littered the road at times, forcing him to slow down and weave through broken mazes. Gus eyed a few cars lying on their sides in ditches. He'd seen similar collections of traffic before, every time he left his home and drove the trusted route down into the city of Annapolis. Shadowy, out-of-focus shapes rested behind the steering wheels of some vehicles. Heads gleamed yellow and white, their mouths cracked open in shouts. Some doors hung open, as though the drivers and passengers had abandoned their rides. Ruts and potholes jarred the SUV at times, rudely surprising Gus. Weeds rose through the pavement's crumbling fissures, their lengths stung by the cold and slumped over at wilting angles. Exits from Middleton, Bridgetown, and Annapolis Royal came into view and flashed by. Anita Little had given him clear directions for this mysterious mansion, a remote home that wouldn't be seen from the highway.
Stay on the 101, and upon your final approach to Digby, about 2 kilometers beyond an extra passing lane, watch for an ordinary gravel road, one that slinks off into a thick forest where nothing can be seen beyond.
Mortimer.
Anita, fidgeting in adorable self-consciousness of her gray hair, had told all she knew about the reclusive billionaire, her brown eyes moist and glistening. Once, she'd said, a limo pulled into a gas station just outside of Halifax, and out popped a couple of tanned dishes straight out of a swimwear competition, dressed in micro-minis and tight tops, flown up from someplace tropical to Nova Scotia upon the invitation of Warren Mortimer. The driver did his best to corral the women, who might have been snorting something at the time, but one told the cashier they were headed to Digby for a private party. Word of that episode had gotten to the townspeople of Digby and fueled gossip for a year. Otherwise, not much was ever heard of that eccentric man living outside town. Hired servants came into Digby on a regular basis, polite but every bit as elusive as Mortimer. They lived on the 100 or so acres of land Mortimer had purchased around 2004 to 2005. He flew in architects and work crews to build a home to be the envy of the Hamptons, or so a few of those hired hands drunkenly let slip while letting off steam at a local bar. Carpenters, plumbers, electricians and bricklayers, landscapers and gardeners, all had signed contracts swearing them to secrecy regarding the work they did. No one knew what went on there as a security gate, and guards prevented anyone venturing too far along the dirt road leading to the estate. One story told of a young, overly amorous couple actually parking within 20 feet of the checkpoint without knowing it, and flashlights were shined on them at the worst possible time.
"White ass up and jiggling, I heard,"
Anita giggled with a charm that prompted Gus to bear his hockey player smile. Mortimer couldn't keep out every prying eye in the years following the mansion's enigmatic construction. Deliveries were made, and the drivers would later talk in local bars. Helicopters and small engine planes would buzz over the property, and stories of a checkered tablecloth of immaculate greenery and glowing buildings flittered through Digby. Tennis courts, raceways, gardens, waterways, and false lagoons were all tastefully arranged within lines of apple trees and cultivated land. No one had ever laid eyes on the man, and with so much open space at his disposal, was it any wonder? Mortimer lived in a world of his own design. As time went on, Digby forgot about the man beyond the edge of society. Anita herself hadn't thought about the man in years until asked. Two wrong turnoffs led Gus into deep timberland, which ended in no man's land, and simply getting back onto the road became a time-consuming challenge. By early afternoon, he finally discovered the hidden driveway. A dirt road branded by fresh tire tracks snaked off into the faded fall brush. Gus eased off the highway, passing through shadows and looking everywhere at once. He drove along one of the roughest stretches he'd ever had the pleasure of meeting. Potholes and shards of rock punished the tires of the all-wheel drive, and Gus wondered if having such a shitty road was part of the grand deterrent as he bounced around in his seat. A web of tree limbs dampened the light, making the woods seem dreary. The rough lane switched back into a curve sharp enough to poke an eye out. Gus eased around the killer bend and spied a white metal gate, opened and pushed aside. It hung off a steel post opposite a guard station built atop a cement foundation. A dark lick of smooth pavement continued another 20 meters before curving out of sight. Something wide and metallic lay along the road, pushed to either side at the halfway point. Gus stopped the SUV, turned off the engine, and sat. He contemplated the end of the gravel road and the beginning of the pavement ahead. His fingers played a nervous piano on the steering wheel. He grabbed his bat, got out of the vehicle, and closed the door to silence the computer voice before it nagged. For a long, considering moment, Gus stood there in regular clothes and boots and just listened, feeling the cold on his scarred face. Hidden birds chirped around the checkpoint. The door to the guard station hung wide open, and forest debris had blown over the floor. But just behind the station stood a house concealed from the road by an impressive hedge. A rosy brick walkway led to the single-story home, built in a Swiss mountain style, set upon a solid cement foundation reminiscent of ancient Japanese castles. Green paint offered some degree of camouflage in the summertime, but not the fall. A gabled roof, wide eaves, and thick redwood beams made the house seem cozy and especially solid, ready for a beating if necessary. And if the smashed windows were any indication, the house had taken its share right on the chin. Gus glanced around and approached the guard station. He leaned through the doorway. A single desk rested against a sliding window, giving a clear view of anyone stopping at the gate. He rapped his knuckles on the glass and figured it could stop a bullet. A bank of ultra-thin monitors rose from the desk's surface, while an empty gun rack hung from a nearby wall. Gus prodded the power button on the mini-computer for a few seconds before discarding it as dead. A cracked water cooler lay on the floor. A leather sofa filled the back wall as well as a steel cabinet that had been ransacked. Gus inspected the drawers, noting the top one had been forced open. He slid a finger along the jagged twist of metal around a wrecked lock. Not a viable weapon was to be seen, not a single shell left unshot. "Don't be stupid," a familiar voice cautioned, one he hadn't heard in a very long time. The Swiss house waited. Leaving the guard station, he walked to the front door, which was also wide open. Twigs and dead branches covered the threshold in a loose mat. He paused there, listening, knowing the dead could be as still as stone. The bat snaked out, and just before he tapped its head against the frame, before he announced his arrival as surely as ringing a Liberty-sized dinner bell, he arrested his swing and considered the silence again. Then he went inside. An open main floor reminded him of his own departed home, except this one had been redecorated by a drunk tornado. Designer chairs had been smashed, leather sofas gutted, and a kitchen island devastated by a sledgehammer. Most of the windows on the ground level had been shattered, allowing a chilling airflow through the house. Shells, plastic and brass, littered the hardwood floor like hard confetti. The first body lay at the base of the staircase, its presence halting Gus in his tracks. Black body armor encased a uniformed male corpse. Velcro straps and empty webbing hung off his person. A messy headshot had removed most of the corpse's face above an exposed horseshoe of teeth and a shattered vase of a skull. Gus winced at the golden shine of deep-set molars. The desiccated skin made it difficult to determine whether the guard had been deadhead or human. A dark plume of organic stain plastered the wall above the body, framed in rivulets of matter caked to the wood surface. Gus exhaled, remembering to breathe, wishing he had a shotgun right about then. No weapon on the corpse, no other bodies. Just one guy who might have taken the easy way out, with no hope to continue, but courage enough to use perhaps his last shell on himself. Gus inspected the wreckage of the first floor and deduced the fight overran the gate, then the station, and stopped at the house. Perhaps a siege, then, either long or short, ended with the last man, his back against the wall, tonguing gunmetal before doing the deed. Of course, that was just one way it might have gone. Gus wiped a hand over his mouth and chin. A wind picked up outside, reminding him of graveyards. That had been the first body he'd seen in months, and he discovered he still wasn't immune to the gut-twisting wrongness of the picture. That unfortunate fucker should have grown old with his wife and kids, not planted on his ass with the top of his skull open and unfit for flowers. He took a steadying breath and concentrated on examining the facts, trying to calm his quickening breath, the steady thrumming in his ears and chest. A fight had happened here, but where were the bodies? A healthy dose of fear swelled up behind his sternum, forcing its way into his heart and guts. Perspiration moistened his face. The walls felt closer. Stepping out of the house, he fast-walked back to the SUV, immediately seeing dark stains upon the earth before and around the gate. A deep-rooted grease blemish wasn't recent, and the elements had failed to remove it over time. Gus stopped at the rear and studied the ground further, feeling his anxiety levels rise and wishing for the calming burn of a drink, a mouthful of any of his old favorites. He hadn't forgotten about his alcoholic past, although he didn't consider himself an alcoholic by any stretch. Whiskey, rum, beer, but mostly the hard stuff, had all armored him against the horrors of the day, grounding him, granting buoyancy upon an endless sea of walking putrefaction. In the beginning, he believed there wasn't any booze on the farm, but there was, stashed away by the various owners, some whose company he enjoyed, some whose he didn't. All the while he was on the farm, Gus didn't partake. He never went on scavenging expeditions either, as Talbert held the keys to those horror shows. Staying sober didn't bother Gus. The farm and its people had not only healed and sheltered him, but had also gradually restored his tattered psyche, which the apocalypse had shredded for 2 whole years. The place had rejuvenated him, resurrected him. There hadn't been a need to numb reality with alcohol. The world seemed just fine while living on the farm. The farm had been his anchor. Now, however, he was in harm's way again. He licked his dry lips and felt the familiar tremble in his fingers. A quick shot of anything 40-proof or better would have been magic for his beating heart. Gus went to the driver's side of the SUV and eased himself behind the steering wheel. He set his jaw and tongued the gaps of his missing front teeth, seeing Roxanne's naked form lying right on the hood of the vehicle. The image softened and left him with the road ahead. Always a road. Sniffing hard and adjusting his balls for luck, he leaned back in the seat. Don't be stupid.
Yeah, Gus whispered and got out of the vehicle. He stopped at the rear and pulled open the hatch. A pile of Nomex gear greeted him, not the original suit he and Scott had taken from the fire station so long before, but a close copy. After he'd been brought to the farm, Adam saw the good sense of wearing the fire gear as body armor and sent Talbert and his minions out to find some. They brought back a load of material, most of which Talbert and his crew dismissed, claiming it was too bulky, among other nitpicking details. Dumb fucks. Gus kicked off the cowboy boots Maggie had given him and pulled on his tan overalls, hooking their black straps over his shoulders. The knees had sewn in padding that would do the job until he could find something better. The steel-toed fire boots went on next, snug and comfortably heavy. Down his right boot went an imitation K-bar knife. A firefighter's protective hood covered his head, and he pulled on it until his face popped through. Then came the heavy coat, which he zipped before patting down the Velcro outer flap. Strips of reflective yellow ringed the ankles, wrists, and chest. The old stuff he'd worn while house-picking in Annapolis did the job, but looking back, there were too many pieces. This was a little bulkier, but only two parts. Five if he counted his helmet, non-regulation, but what the hell, and his boots and gloves. The gloves, they were something else. They resembled combat gloves with their black leather and articulated knuckle plates. Just making fists made Gus want to try punching out a wall. Durable beyond compare, the gloves fit comfortably, and pull tabs sealed up the wrists, reinforcing the cuffs on the jacket. Adam had given the gloves to him, and Gus had asked where he'd found the brutish things, to which Adam only smirked, as though saying, "Don't ask where I got 'em or how I got 'em, just be glad I got 'em." Gus was. Getting back into the SUV, he most certainly was. He put his motorcycle helmet on, visor up, and kept the bat handy. A familiar building of energy powered up his limbs, and Gus wished again he had something to drink just to turn his dials down. He was getting too amped up, the expectation of action becoming too powerful. He started the engine and eased farther down the road, eyeing the hall of dense foliage on either side. His foot hit the brake at the halfway mark. "Shit," Gus hissed and got out of the SUV, taking the bat with him. On either side of the road were portable armored barriers, the kind special forces hunkered down behind while firing upon an enemy. Steel gray, with a slash of red paint across the surface, just below open gun ports, the four walls had been pushed off the road. Talbert had been there, all right. A parting in the brush drew Gus's attention, a trail made by four-wheeled quads. Holding the bat at guard, he stalked through the opening and followed the ATV tracks through the forest. Brush snapped and crackled loudly underfoot, making him cringe at times, until he came to an enormous fire pit. Gus let the bat drop to his waist. The pit itself might have been made by an excavator, but he figured someone got the shitty end of a deal and had to dig it with a really big shovel. He didn't feel the need to jump down there and measure the depth, but it looked deep enough to stand in with the rim reaching his shoulders or chin. It certainly was deep enough to fry whatever dead things had been piled into it, and fry someone had. Ash-flecked bones and teeth filled the crater, dull against the scorched earth. Skulls with their jaws stretched wide sang a hungry dirge, while others seemed to howl hysterics at their solitary visitor. Arms and fingers reached for the pit's edges, a necklace of slivers clawing for escape. Gus couldn't remember if he had ever seen so many bones in one place before, and the sight made his knees weak. The woods hiding this horrific barbecue remained still, and from his experience no gimp would be able to creep up on him, not with the dry brush carpeting the ground. And he hoped to Christ the rats weren't around. A drink. Just one to steady his nerves, to take the edge off. That's all he needed. Quick and nasty. But the evil part of him, the part that swore he wasn't an alcoholic, murmured sweetly that it didn't have to be just one. Seriously,
What better way to face the day than by kicking back and tying one on? Or in this case, loading several in. He pulled on his nose, erasing an itch, and backed away from the open pit, just in case the bones did something entirely freaky. If they did, Gus would simply bolt for the SUV and damn Talbert and his boys.
Couldn't find him, Adam. Sorry, Maggie.
Matter of fact, that story rang temptingly clear in Gus's head. But he shook his head in slow acceptance of his purpose. He'd go a little farther. See the mystery mansion that had tempted Talbert out there. Find out what happened to that alpha male shit-stain and his butternut bum buddies and return with a full report. Gus returned to the SUV and started it up. He stared at the edges of the paved road, his peripheral vision seeing the grins of skeletal faces. Sweat covered his face in a sheen that had nothing to do with heat. His fingers tapped on the curve of the steering wheel before he gripped the leather. Fear. Dread. The old, unwanted friends sat astride his shoulders like chortling goblins, realizing all his defenses had been lowered, and just amazed to have such persuasive seats. Even better, they smelled doubt as ripe as putrefying compost. The road took him down a long, spidery tunnel, wondrous in any season, with yellow and orange leaves piled up in stiff drifts. He drove along this late autumn pipeline, the road straightening out like a neck struggling to swallow a bone, until it finally opened in eye-popping wonder. Chapter 4 Gus knew from his days as a house painter that the older houses often presented the most work. They weren't armored against age and the elements, like the newer models with their candy-shell vinyl siding. Gables, high-peaked fascia, and wide soffits could make a house painter's job tricky at times, and without the safety of a scaffold, the gymnastics performed at the end of a 40-foot ladder to reach those last bare spots rivaled circus acts. The house before Gus filled the width of the windshield and would have taken him and a professional crew months to prep and paint. Mansion. Gus tried the word and marveled at the reality. He eased to a stop, brain frozen by the palatial magnificence of Mortimer's superstructure. Overall, the house was white, with a marked Swiss influence of bare wooden beams and brackets lining and crisscrossing the upper levels. The first level appeared coated in a siding of stone, while looming balconies dotted a third level, plastered in unblemished weatherboarding. The home looked to be three stories tall at a glance, but rising above the center of the home were a fourth and fifth level, marked by a gigantic dome perched on top. Spider legs of black girders creased the structure's creamy surface. At a guess, Gus figured the whole construction was easily 50,000 square feet of living space, perhaps even upward of 70, all under multiple roofs with eaves wide enough to dance on. Gables, intricate carvings and moldings of dragons and chimera perched almost everywhere, with one serpentine beast fashioned out of copper and drawing attention to a small chimney, amazed Gus with their size and the sheer creativity necessary to conceive such a design. Mortimer had to have been a billionaire. This house rivaled the size of a shopping mall and would eat up millions in yearly upkeep. Black paneling on sections of the roof glared flatly at him, and he recognized solar paneling, but doubted even those few installations could keep up with the power demand. He'd be surprised if the damned monster didn't have elevators in the dome. He'd be even more surprised if the place didn't have its own indoor amusement park. The mansion's monstrous bulk eclipsed the orchards, farmland, and any landscaped or architectural goodies lurking on the other side. Gus forced himself to stop staring. No wonder Talbert had an Everest-sized chubby for the place. From a survivalist point of view, the man had discovered an emperor's Shangri-La. Hell, he and his posse were probably still inside somewhere, exploring the place and its potential treasures. Entirely plausible, given the mansion's overwhelming vastness. Searching every cranny would take a week at least.
Fuck, a frozen duck. Twice.
Gus muttered, craning his neck over the steering wheel and taking it all in. Then he noticed them, on the lower levels and parts of the third, mostly the balconies. Shutters. Metallic shutters, with the added defense of timbers nailed across them. He'd been so awestruck by the beast of a palace he'd completely missed the obvious. The place appeared to be tightly secured, tighter than a mosquito's bag stretched over an elephant's ass, all except the double doors comprising the main entrance. Rows of fat, black-veined marble columns partially obscured the doors, supporting an arched overhang that made Gus's jaw drop and stay there. Iron dragons resided there, captured in a regal prance.
"Morty," he whispered, drenched in awe. "You the man."
His foot released the brake, and the SUV crept forward like a dog on its belly, sidling up to its master, begging for a crunchy treat. The driveway looped around another opulent example of Mortimer's wealth and taste, a water-green statue of a lion battling a dragon, set into and rising above a pool bordering on Olympic size. Perhaps it was a pool, but after witnessing the girth of the mansion, Gus suspected it was really a fountain. Mortimer no doubt had a couple of indoor pools, just because, since he's spending money, why the hell not? Complete with those bikini-clad Japanese fuckdroids.
God damn.
Dazed, Gus shook his head.
"Probably got your own rocket pad out back, don't you, you affluent bastard, you?"
Parked to the left of the marble columns was Talbert and Company's minivan, woefully out of place in such a scene. Damn thing looked like an old tin can resting against a mountain of platinum.
"You are not supposed to be here," Gus muttered, stopping his ride near the minivan.
He made sure nothing obstructed the SUV in case he needed to make a quick getaway. Gus opened the door, and that little click of unlatching metal parts made him pause. Nothing leaped at him from behind the columns. No army of deadheads rose from behind the low fountain wall or burst forth from the doors. Only the soft creak of door hinges as he pushed it farther open. He got out with his bat and stood there, poised to jump back into his ride. A deep, steadying breath failed to calm him, and he remembered his nerves were steadier when armored with Uncle Jack. Nothing moved, and a case of fidgeting overcame him. His toes itched. His helmet felt too tight. He needed to take a leak.
"Christ almighty," a voice chided him. "Bring some whiskey along on the next one, will you? Vodka, rum, mouthwash, something. You're a wreck."
"Not a wreck," Gus told himself. "Just out of practice is all.